Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Something in my email caught my eye a couple of months ago. Rock writer Tony Fletcher, who lives in the Hudson Valley and who's been an occasional guest on this show, was selling off huge chunks of his music collection. Why was the leading authority on Keith Moon and a bunch of other bands hawking a life's collection of CDs, records, and DVDs? It turns out Fletcher and his family are leaving the Catskills to take to the road for the next year. On New Year's Day, they're off. Off to Europe, Asia, Africa, and Oceania, with little more than their backpacks. I had to know more. Tony Fletcher, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Hi, Ian. That's a gracious intro. Thank you.
So what's going on? You're leaving us.
Well, temporarily. Yes, temporarily. And you got it right. We are pretty much putting our lives on our backs. Three of us. We have an older son in college who's a junior in college and sort of happily ensconced in college. But with our son who's going to be 11 this Christmas, we are putting what we can carry on our backs and going to see the world while it's one of those things, while we're still fit enough to do it and while there's a window in our lives to do it, and at a point that we feel that we can take a child who's at a great age to experience the world firsthand and maybe get the education of a lifetime in the process.
Well, I have to imagine this was not a decision you made lightly. How long had you been thinking about it?
Been mulling it over for years because it really came to me several years back at Burning Man, which I went to with my older son five years out of six. And we did the last of those years we did as a family trip. So it must have been the penultimate one of those years when I was just with my older son. So that's probably 4 years back that somebody was taking their kids off to Cambodia for several months to have them volunteer and have them see a different lifestyle than what they're used to in America. And the same way that when I first went to Burning Man, there was this sense of you don't take kids to Burning Man. Then you get there and realize it's the best thing you could do for your kid. I think there's probably a similar visceral reaction to the idea of going around the world with a kid. Like, why would you do that? How can you do that? And then you stop and think and say, maybe this is actually the best gift that we could give a child. And so we got talking about it, my wife and I, after I came back that year, and gradually we got to see where we thought there could be a window in our lives to do it. And we carried on with some of the planning and kind of kept it under wraps until we let our community know back in the spring of this year. And actually for the last several months, everybody's walking around very good-naturedly saying, haven't you guys gone yet? but that's what you get for putting out an announcement 7 or 8 months in advance. We had so many things to work out. We thought the more notice we could give people, the better.
Has anyone tried to talk you out of it?
Nobody. Now, and that's almost unexpected. I don't know whether to put that down to the area that we live in, that people have very open minds, the friends that we have. But even, and it's not even, I've said but even, and it shouldn't be a but even, the teachers and the staff at our son's school, and at the point that I announced this, I was still on the school board, that down in Ontario, and been on the school board for 6 years. I have to say, just about everybody related to the school also seems to think it's a wonderful thing to do, and that the education our son will get will be comparable, let's say at least comparable to what he would get if he was staying here in the Hudson Valley through his fifth and sixth grade.
So what will you do? I mean, where do you want to go, and what do you want to see, and, you know, what are your day-to-day plans?
Some of it is organized and some of it is very loose. We try to figure that the countries that we want to go to, and we bought the first set of tickets because that way we were tied into it. I have to be honest and say, had we not bought the tickets to leave on January 1st 6 months ago, we would have put it off mm-hmm. because there is so much to take care of when you're this age, approximately 15, you've got a house and, you know, pets and a car, etc. This is why people don't do these trips, because once you get into what you have to take care of to go away, it's easier not to do it, not to go away at length. But I think that apart from here and there, where we've got a couple of sort of mildly special things going on, really it's about doing this economically. One hopes that the American dollar can go a long way in parts of Southeast Asia and hopefully India as well. I think that we want to try and see the world from a point of, we're not going to too many cities. We're trying to get out and about to explore, do a lot of trekking, a lot of hiking, a lot of seeing how the world lives. I think it's a particularly interesting time to be going. I mean, we're doing this interview at a point when America is going through one of its periodic periods of acting very, very scared about the rest of the world. And I think that it would behoove us to see the rest of the world, see other cultures, creeds, the various religions of the world, see how they interact with us and interact with our child. Some of it is based on that idea that because it might sound like I could realize it might sound like we sort of won the lottery or somebody died us and left us a fortune and we said let's go off and spend it going around the world. It's actually the opposite. We realized that we had got to a point in our lives where if we thought we were going to get to New Zealand and we thought we were going to get to India and we thought we were going to get to Cambodia, we were kidding ourselves. To think that we could go to one of those countries one year as a family, then go to another one the next year, really was not easily going to happen. And what you find with people who undertake these kind of big round-the-world ventures is you're actually better off renting out your house, selling off a fair amount of things. It's very easy to let go of possessions once you realize you can't live with them for a year, and finance it that way because actually the travel, even just the flights, I think the flights probably work out better going all the way around the world and just taking off, say, for India and back one year or New Zealand and back one year.
Do you speak other languages?
No, I am really bad at that, although I loved learning French when I was a kid back in England and got good at it. My wife speaks pretty much perfect French. She lived there for a year and never let it go. She speaks passable Spanish. I mean, the one country we're going to in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, because we're going to Morocco in the north, but we're also going to Tanzania. And although it's a very touristy country, my understanding is that their primary language is Swahili, and English comes down quite low on the list. So that will be quite interesting. I think in other parts that we're going to, we'll get by. We're not going to the sort of China-Japan part of the world. We're staying further south than that. We're trying to stay in places that are relatively warm, which just keeps our load somewhat lighter, and places that we had really, really wanted to visit. And also, if you were to see our pin map, it there's a certain, here and there it leaps around, but there's a certain straight line to it that brings us down and around and back, so there's not too much to-ing and fro-ing either.
Now, I don't want to paint Noel with a broad brush, but anyone who's spent time with kids around 11 years old knows they can lose interest. Are you worried at all about being out there so long with your child?
Yeah, that's a perfectly fair question to ask, and I think the answer is we'd be kidding ourselves if we didn't think that that this is going to involve some work, and there may be points at which it all gets a little bit much. There may be points at which experience from other people suggests that we will be lucky to get through this without any illnesses, particularly kind of dietary illnesses. I think just moving from climate to climate and different foods that your body isn't used to. All of that is very, very real. I think it's a matter of weighing up your pros and cons and thinking about what one has in one's regular life at home and what one can gain from travel. And we have proposed this to our younger son, and we talked to him about it, and he was genuinely excited. In fact, so excited that we probably have had to kind of downplay some of that more recently so that he doesn't think it's just, you know, one year of nonstop travel. Obviously, there's schoolwork to take care of, and there may be parts that we might hit a place in the world and say, wow, this is not what we expected, and not as good as we expected, and maybe at this particular point we're homesick for something. But I think there's one of the great cliches in the book, no pain, no gain. So we're steeled up against that to some extent. We're also taking our son's guitar with us. He's been playing since he was a very small kid, and because of that, and because he's got kind of some experience of playing in semi-public community groups, we're really hoping that music can play a role here, and that where we are going to struggle with language, and you were right to reference that as well, where we might struggle as adults with language, and if we were just the two of us traveling on our own, may or may not encounter incredibly open, friendly people. I'm really, I've got my fingers crossed. I'm very encouraged to believe that having a kid with a guitar on his back will actually open us up to invitations, conversations, musical conversations, and that where adults can sometimes struggle with language, maybe kids can get on and play. And I'm looking forward to the notion of Noel being able to play songs for kids, and hopefully to kind of receive songs in turn.
And I have to say, I've met your boy once, but he's prodigal on the guitar. I mean, he's really talented.
Well, thank you for saying that. He's actually, as we talk, he's going to be taking part in a Paul Green Rock Academy show this weekend. There's a lot of talented musical kids in the Hudson Valley, and I think that's all part of the rich history of this area. But there's a lot of real talented kids here, and he did want to take his guitar. I think he figures he gets out of a backpack that way, and he does to some extent. So we're just trying to weigh up right now about what we're taking. And as I was saying earlier, it's incredible how you suddenly realize, wow, I'm actually going to be living with this backpack for the best part of a year, and that's it.
How hard was it to do your music sale? Because that's how I found out about this trip coming up, and I think music fans, they really do spend a lifetime accumulating and diving through bins and, getting rarities and stuff, and you were ready to give it all up?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it was a slight over-exaggeration on the introduction. I mean, there's no way my Who records are going, there's no way there's a certain library of stuff that is very, very cool that I really can't let go. There were some 7-inch singles that have followed me around the world that I can't really let go of. I do know of people, I mean, we live in really interesting times here with the whole kind of music streaming and YouTube and the digitalization of music, because I do know other people that similarly have spent a lifetime accumulating more music than their walls can hold, than their floors should be able to hold up, and have reached a point where they actually said, I just felt the need to let it go. When I did this sale a few weeks back, two or three really, really good things came out of it. And actually, because when I was getting into doing it, I don't really like kind of itemizing things and going through it. It all feels a little bit depressing, just the notion of getting this stuff together, and it just feels very time consuming. And a part of me wished I wasn't doing it. But two or three really good things came out of it, quite apart from getting some cash for the trip. One was that I felt like I was thinning the herd, and that by going through such a vast collection of CDs, I realized there were CDs I just did not know I had. There was music I genuinely did not know that I had in my possession, which makes me realize how fortunate I am as I say it. And I also realized how much music I had never actually asked for. I mean, as a music journalist, you get sent a lot of music. In the 90s, when everything came out on CD, I was just getting almost everything that came out, and I fast as I could ever exchange it for music I liked, I would get more of it. And there's a lot of kind of just, for me, somewhat generic rock music that I really didn't mind seeing the back of. But at the same time, I was coming across all this great world music, all this great electronic, the more sort of esoteric electronica, the kind of Aphex Twin kind of CDs that are very jazzy. Some of them are not easy listening, but I figure that they have almost like a classical bent to them, and they can sit in my collection pretty much till I die. So that was one good thing. The other good thing that came out of it, I'd had a period of DJing dance music back in the 90s, and I had a wonderful time. And you get older, and I don't do that, and I had some magnificent vinyl, that some of which I'd been given, but some of which had cost me $10-$12 a piece. And somebody came along whose interests were absolutely in that area, and I felt like my music was going to a really good home. He told me he'll let me know if he DJs publicly in Kingston with the music, but he was so thrilled to get some of this music, and I just felt great that at a point where vinyl's making a comeback, but old dance vinyl is kind of hard to unload, that this music was going to a great home and would be appreciated. So there's something to be said for it, but As I talk to you, I'm looking at shelves that are still kind of heaving with with a lot of music, so it's hardly as if I've completely exterminated my collection.
Now, one thing that's going to happen while you're on the road is that your next book is going to come out, which you've written about Wilson Pickett for his first biography. Is that right?
It is. It is, absolutely. There's been no biography on Wilson Pickett, and this will be it.
Tell us about the project.
I'm a big fan of soul music, and I think growing up in Britain, anybody who's part of a sort of punk to mod or mod to punk generation, even probably on through the dance culture, is a big fan of soul music. And I think I had been sort of subconsciously looking for an opportunity to write about soul music. 2 to 3 years back, maybe about 3 years back, I just found myself playing some Wilson Pickett and loving it and just stopping and saying, hang on, why isn't there a book on my shelves? Why has nobody written a book about Wilson Pickett? And figured, you know, James Brown, Sam Cooke, Otis Redding, Aretha Franklin, Marvin Gaye, all of those have been addressed. And went and looked at his life thinking, well, we know he made some classic records, In the Midnight Hour, Land of a Thousand Dances, Mustang Sally. I mean, the list is pretty lengthy. I thought, well, maybe his life just wasn't that interesting. And other than the fact that he didn't die young, like Sam Cooke or Otis Redding, and his dad didn't shoot him like Marvin Gaye, you know, other than the fact that he died a relatively normal, if somewhat premature, death, his life is a really rich story. It's almost like you can tell the story of Black American music for just about a 50-year period through this one guy. He's just continually at the vanguard of what is going on, and that's everything from leaving the cotton fields of Alabama behind in the 1950s for the industrial north of Detroit, all the way through being the very first ever person to headline a black music package to go to Africa. He headlined in Ghana in 1971 before he was even 30, to a crowd of I don't know, it was over 100,000. It could have been 250,000, and they really treated him as though he was God. And that's a hell of a journey to take, and it happens in a pretty small space of time. So I feel there's a really good, bigger story to tell in the life of Wilson Pickett, and hopefully I've told it, and hopefully it's one of those books that won't just appeal to somebody who's got Wilson Pickett singles in their collection, but anybody who's really interested in soul music, Black American music, you know, the times that he lived in, et cetera,
Now, I don't know how Wi-Fi is in some of the places you're going, but will you be writing as you travel?
Yeah, I get the feeling that probably Wi-Fi is around more than we might think. I'm actually, it's going to be very interesting. I imagine we'll go to third world countries where everybody has a cell phone. I will be staying in touch. At the same time, with doing this trip, and you asked how people tried to talk us out of it, and it takes you back to the notion that particularly in Europe, there's a tradition of kids doing a gap year when they leave high school before they go to college. And traditionally, in fact, I was just back in England, and a friend of mine, his son has just done this and is just off around the world with a backpack, and the parents have to kind of hold on. And traditionally, before the internet, you'd be lucky if your son sent or daughter sent you a postcard every 3 months from some country you'd never even heard of. And I think that it might be really good for us not to be online the whole time and to actually absorb what we're doing and not feel the need to blog about it on a daily basis. There will be some writing going on. We actually got I'm very glad about this. We actually got a shoe sponsorship deal with a very cool hiking, fell running, trail running company, and I'm going to be writing for their website. I may well send some columns back for salon.com. That's part of the plan as we see different countries and we look at how they look at America and the rest of the world. And I think other than that, your old Facebook and Instagram, I think Instagram is probably the way to go. I have been following random people on round the world trips these last few months on Instagram. And every morning I get up, look at their pictures, and it gives me the encouragement to go ahead and plan, you know, carry on planning this trip.
Well, Tony Fletcher is getting on the plane on New Year's Day, and we will hopefully check back in with him in about a year from now. Until then, follow him at ijamming.net and the other outlets he's just mentioned. I'm so excited for you. I can't wait to see how it goes, and I'm really glad we had the chance to catch up before you all go.
I am as well, Ian. Thanks very much for the invitation. I really appreciate it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.